You may remember us starring in the ever so amazing film on Easter, where we open up the doors to a few skeletons in our closet. Now, initially, Sten had asked us to share our story at our first Easter here at Midcurrent. I, of course, said yes, and Preston said, why don't we let people get to know us a little better, maybe even like us before we share it all? And to be honest, we weren't really there yet. Fast forward 1 year, and sure enough, Sten came back around and asked us again. Since we have a couple friends out there, we've gained more trust in one another, and now, honestly, we appreciate what we've been through rather than be embarrassed by it. We decided it was time. After our story being shared here to 200 plus people on the busiest Sunday yet at Midcurrent, it was then shared on Facebook, and nearly 11,000 views later, we realized A, there's a lot of noisy people out there, and B, this story needed to be told.
Now, besides it being hard to watch and hear yourself on video, and I know you all can relate to that, it's incredibly exciting to me that this video was shared as many times as it was, because to me, that means that God is using our story to give others hope, hope that their marriage could be saved, people can be changed. But a 9-minute video doesn't quite share the whole story. For those of you that have not heard our story, it's okay. Basically, Tina and I hit rock bottom, then we dug a deeper hole. We tried to come back up for air, only to realize we were still on the bottom of the ocean floor. The video ended with us basically grabbing each other's hands after we walked through a few things that happened. And we walked into our house holding each other's hands, gazing at each other's eyes like the end of many chick flicks you see. Now, there may be some truth to this happy ending, but we got a lot of questions afterwards because that seemed all too easy. And to be honest, it wasn't easy, and in this world, it still isn't easy.
When Sten asked us to speak today, he mentioned us speaking on God's love and how we got out of our mess. Well, again, I of course said yes, Sten, of course we can speak before asking Preston. And then I asked Sten if I could switch up the content a little bit. Although God's love and grace, was a big part of why we were able to create a story of redemption, getting to the point of forgiveness had more to do with our minds than it did our hearts. So today we want to share with you how in the world we were able to move past our negative thoughts and, in our case, jump into forgiveness and recover from hitting rock bottom. But first, we need to rewind a little bit. Preston and I first started dating in college, where Mr. Pettis stole my heart while sporting Jesus posters on his dorm walls among his roommates' Britney Spears collection. We got married 5 years later after a wild but rocky road. In fact, when we got engaged, we were actually broke up. We thought that making the commitment would mean we were ready, and 5 years later, our house was full, three kids, all under 4 years old. Gosh, I wonder why you guys had such trouble in your marriage. It's so weird that you would have any stress at all, right? Now, pictured on the screen is a current, very planned and staged photo of our family of five, the Instagram version, of course. But we thought we'd let you peer in a bit more to real life at the Pettis house because we can't imagine a better way to start a message than to share with you our kiddos as toddlers having tantrums. Now, you might be wondering, like, why are they having tantrums, right? Why are they so upset? We don't really know. They didn't really know. But no, really, I'm pretty sure I can take a guess. How incredibly perfect is this? Preslin, our oldest, is oblivious to the fact that her siblings are losing their minds. She gets ready to go to her first day of kindergarten, and they are stuck at home. Now, this next one is Preslin. She happened to not be getting her way. Weird. For those of you that know her, she wasn't in control and was pretty upset. I specifically remember her yelling to me, "Don't!" as I was taking a picture of her having this tantrum. Second picture, next picture up here is Layton. He is now 8. Oh, makes me sad. Layton wasn't happy about the outfit that mom picked out. He wanted to wear different shorts, and my mom instincts would also say that he was probably sleep deprived at this moment. And Tenley, oh, Miss Tenley.
This was her first night of dance. A little out of her element at the time, and since she's the baby of the family, I'm certain that this was probably one of the first times she was told, like, what to do, have actual instructions. And really, are you even parenting if you don't take pictures of your kids while they're in the middle of a tantrum? Okay, so really, why does anybody have tantrums? And yes, as adults, we have tantrums too. It's usually because we aren't getting our way, our story wasn't being heard, and we were misunderstood. We have a picture or a video, not of us, but we have a video to display this as an adult having a tantrum.
I don't want to pay bills. I don't want to pay bills. I want to be there now. I want to be there now. No, 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 no. I don't know where I'm going. Mama, mama. Where's my Wi-Fi? Hate you, Wi-Fi. I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. I wanted soy. I wanted soy. I want it so much.
Now, we like to think as adults our tantrums aren't quite this ridiculous, but I'd be willing to bet if we had a camera on you at our worst, or us on our worst, we'd be quite embarrassed. Hence the reason we show pics of our kids and not pictures of us. We throw tantrums with our thoughts and our words and our actions and feelings all the time. We will forever in our house call this toddler brain, and we have a feeling that after this message, you guys will too. To understand this a little more, we wanted to share with you some things we've learned about the actual brain.
So one of the reasons Tina asked Sten to change this topic today was that she knew in order to get me up here, it'd have to be something that excited me, and anything about the human body and brain and sciencey stuff gets me excited. So get a little bit into science here. We're going to talk about two parts of the brain. That's going to help with this message. First, let's talk about the limbic system. Your brain is always changing and adapting, but the limbic system is done developing by age 3. And it's the part of the brain that looks for constant threats. So it's always scanning what's around you and looking for a threat and something that would alarm you, and then you're supposed to deal with that. Obviously, as a toddler, you can't really deal with that very well, so you ask your parent to help you. But as you get older, you have to deal with it. So now, as you're scanning your the problem is that this limbic system, we'll call it the toddler brain from here on out, can't reason. So it can't decide what is actually for real happening or what's being made up or imagined. And another problem is it learns. So it starts to remember these potential threats and throw alarms out even maybe when it's not there. So you start forming habits from these alarms as toddler, and then if you're not diligent with it, you'll keep some of these habits as you get older. The second part of the brain is called the prefrontal cortex. This is the big, powerful, basically the front of the brain. This sets us apart from all other animals and all other species on the planet. This is the decision-making part of the brain. It can look at all the information going on around you and process it with how to act, respond. It can think ahead. It can look at a tree and figure out the steps to build a house. For all those young adults out there, this part of the brain isn't done developing until your late 20s. So this is why parents do know better. My parents are actually here today, and yes, I'm admitting that in front of everybody here today, that parents do know, they do know better, and that's one of the reasons why. To take this a step farther, the prefrontal cortex is also where you get empathy, appreciation, and you create your values. And if not, and these are the areas that enhance our lives and keep our brains working in the adult brain. So these two parts of the brain do work really well together, as one looks for alarm and also creates emotion, and the other one decides how to deal with those. But under stress, our bodies go to the quick, easy, simple toddler brain because it's more of a reaction. So stress brings that about rather than the large, powerful, solution-driven adult brain.
Now, Preston could keep going on and on and on about the brain, but for now, that's all we need to know on that. The problem is the toddler brain works 100 times faster than the adult brain. The toddler brain doesn't do rational thought, however, it does learn. Every time we retell the story, the toddler brain thinks it's happening again. So just as we're talking, it keeps thinking it's happening right then and there. How many of you have told yourself a story over and over and over again until it made you more mad? In some instances, this thing didn't even happen. So, but your toddler brain remembered it before, so you were mad before it even happened. For example, it's like 3 o'clock, and usually on Thursdays, your husband is home a little bit later, and so you're already like getting upset, but it's only 3 o'clock. They're not even supposed to be home yet, but you're already upset. Or maybe your kids have gone off to school and you told them to make their bed and you're certain they did not make their bed, but you go into the room and they made your bed, but you're like still mad even though the bed's already made. It's something that your toddler brain is saying, right? That this has happened before. I'm gonna be mad before it even starts. Or maybe something not so awesome happens in your life, something more life-changing or threatening. A friend gossips about you, your new job isn't quite what you thought it was going to be. And, you know, really for us, it was a really messy marriage. And because it was easy to do, we started to share that misery with others around us. The more we shared it, you guessed it, the more our toddler brain learned it, and we got mad and fell into a horrible spot of just constant tension in our lives. We felt like we were working so hard to not be like that typical couple and arguing and all of that, and our marriage ended up small compromises, small conversations all over the place, and we were just not happy. And so at that point, we were no rings on our fingers, splitting time with our kids, and we were really completely miserable. We went into autopilot with our thoughts instead of being in control of our thoughts. We let our toddler brain take over, and even our automatic function at times was taking a backseat. So, quick time out, we're roughly 1,000 words in, and we've only had one mention of God, no scripture, and you may be thinking, are we even in church today? Yes, yes we are, we're going to get there. So here we go. We want to unpack a verse with you in a bit, and we promise to bring it all back together, so we have one of those little shareable quotes for Facebook, so Sten can know that this was a really awesome sermon and he missed out. But first, so we want you to write down one thing or think of one thing that has sent you into that spiraling toddler brain, like our kiddos in the previous photo. This could be an argument with your spouse, a lash out at your kids for not hustling out the door, a conversation with a friend that didn't go as planned, a careless driver. Now just take a little moment, think about what that thing may be, write it down if you want. Now, we are going to have you guys all come up since we have small group, one by one, and just share what that thing was. What? You already knew I was joking? No, here's the verse that we promised.
So Paul writes in Romans 12:2, "Do not copy the behavior and customs of the world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good, pleasing, and perfect."
Changing the way you think changes your perspective, which changes how you act in the world. Paul's words here aren't new. Change your mind is the central theme of Jesus' very first sermon, his first sermon ever told. So learning God's will for you will come through as a result of changing the way you think, and changing the way you think comes from not copying the world's behaviors.
Now, this isn't an easy task because our brains will let negative emotions dominate our positive emotions all the time. And it's set up this way for survival. So if you're walking into some beautiful place, you get to a beautiful scene,
all of a sudden a snake jumps out, you're not going to hesitate to look at the beautiful scenery. You're going to get in fight or flight, and you're going to take off, right? So you can stay alive to enjoy that view. So those negative tendencies will dominate other areas of our life, and since our brains remember, these negative thoughts will continue to grow. And since we develop those habits when we're young, a lot of those things that happen to us when we're young make things happen later on. So your story when you're young does matter. If you're an individual dominated by a toddler brain, negative emotions, it'll also make it unlikely to think of the positive things. So you can't see what somebody is doing to benefit you. So appreciation is actually the foundation of adult brain relationships. And research shows that it typically takes 5 positive gestures to counterbalance 1 negative remark.
So the real point and the real reason that we have you guys here today is for you guys to know that you need to compliment your wife 5 times and not just once.
In 5 different ways, right? Yeah.
Ironically, positive emotions are more important to long-term well-being. You'll live longer and healthier and happier if you can experience considerably more positive emotions than negative ones. The brain is highly trainable, so we first need to recognize when we shift into toddler brain mindset. So let's turn back to some more advice from Paul in Philippians 4:8-9 out of the Message translation. Summing it all up, friends, I'd say you'll do best by filling your minds and meditating on things true, noble, reputable, authentic, compelling, gracious. The best, not the worst, the beautiful, not the ugly, things to praise, not things to curse. Put into practice what you learned from me, what you heard and saw and realized. Do that, and God, who makes everything work together, will work you into his most excellent harmonies.
So for me to start creating this, I had to change a lot of daily practices to get this verse to work. I had to stop trying to control my environment and start controlling my thoughts. Now, this isn't an easy task, because getting back to science, your subconscious thoughts run 95% of your brain activity. 95%. So only 5% is what you consciously think about. So you have to, in order to change your subconscious, it takes a lot of time and a lot of daily habits to train all these things that have already been created from your past. So our adult brain is designed to find solutions if you can let the adult brain work and not the toddler brain take over. So we developed 4 steps that we've learned to help with this, to keep us in this adult brain. So number 1, aim for a daily spiritual practice. Finding time to create this mindset shift is huge. Give God and yourself time together so you can grow and be a better person. This is something that totally changed my life, and I've always had faith be a part of my life, but I never thought I'd be a person that wanted to get up every morning and do this, and I had to learn to do it first or it didn't happen for me.
Yeah, so I started to learn from Preston doing this and seeing him every morning, just super disciplined, down in the chair in our living room. And I thought, oh, that looks kind of nice. I'll go join him. And he was like, babe, I love you, but this is my time. You need to go find your own time, your own space. This is mine. This is mine and God. And so I actually made my little like area in our house that is always set up, always ready to go. And for me, that was important. It's like putting on the yoga pants before, you know, you start your day. So maybe you get a workout in, that sort of thing. And so I needed to have that organized, a space for all of my stuff so that my Bible stayed in the same spot, my pen, my journal, everything was right there. And that was key for me.
Number 2 is acknowledge the alarms. So you need to find the triggers that are setting you off and acknowledge what those really are. That'll help you before they happen. It'll help that you not get flooded with those emotions right away. This seems like no big deal, but it really reduces you doing things that you'll regret later. One of my triggers was all these expectations I had that I wanted to get done, and everybody else was in my way of not being able to get those things done. So then I would regret or resent all these things that I had to do for you or the kids, and I wasn't even acting the way I wanted to act in those moments.
One of my triggers was multitasking. So I had to own the phrase, wherever you are, be all there. because I found myself annoyed that I couldn't do what I wanted or be where I wanted. And if someone came to interrupt my situation, I was flustered, I was annoyed, and at the end of the day, I felt like I hadn't accomplished anything, or really, I wasn't anywhere where I said I was or where I wanted to be.
Number three, we have to assess these threats. So without blaming, denying, or avoiding, which a lot of guys do, we have to assess how these threats are really affecting us and or what we are imagining.
Now, usually if I took a few seconds really to assess, I could calm down and see the event or thing for what it really was in that situation, if there was some sort of threat or something that was going on. If I didn't take the time, I would instantly turn into toddler brain and then kind of game over once someone turns into that phase.
Yeah, for me, I would realize that I would quickly react from it, and a lot of times it wouldn't turn out and I wouldn't act the way I wanted to be acting. So most of the time this wasn't a big deal, but as my brain was making these out, I had to really think of what was happening in front of me, and it changed. Well, it's really not as big of a deal as my brain was telling myself it was.
Well, and now when we both go in that, because we have this just even phrase of toddler brain, in the middle of an argument at times we'll be like, nope, can't do it, toddler brain, like this isn't going to go anywhere, and we instantly just kind of have to part ways, even though we want to, like, under our breath, keep arguing or saying different things. We know that, again, if I'm in toddler brain, I know I'm not getting out of it, and I know he's not getting out of it.
Number four, we need to advance as quickly as possible. What that means is to focus on improvement. See, our brains and bodies don't like pain, so if you can minimize the toddler brain, your powerful prefrontal cortex, adult brain, will help come up with a solution that would be a positive one. Otherwise, you'll just continue the cycle, and the main focus centered around your thought process of, oh, my main focus that I had to do was I centered myself around what is the next right thing for me to do at the time.
And Preston shared that statement, the next best thing, the next right step, the next right thing to do. Instead of thinking like so far out in the future, it was just like that very next small thing. One area in my life I improved at this time was discontinuing the idea that I needed to drink in order to have fun or be fun or have people over or anything. And in the middle of our mass, I stopped drinking. I had no idea how long my sobriety would last, but I knew it couldn't stay the same way that it was. And although it wasn't a huge issue, it was something that wasn't the next right step for me. And my new advancement was to drink only to celebrate, but not to mask any sort of feelings or stress that I was going through.
Now, most of these things we're talking about today are, we just talked about, are big changes. But most of the time, you gotta think, to get big changes, you gotta think small. So you gotta create little small habits, and then these big changes will come. Commit to small repetitions of behaviors to get this new habit to form. To give you guys an example of habits and how your brain works, I want everybody to sit up straight. Take a deep breath. All I want you to do is take your hands and fold them in front of you. Now take a look at which fingers are on top. So if you put your hands apart and try to do the other fingers on top, usually it feels awkward, it's a little bit confusing, so this is a habit you don't have to think about. So if you had to do that, you'd have to consciously think every time before you folded your hands that, oh yeah, I'm going to fold it the other way until it becomes a new norm for you. Then the habit would be created, but it takes time to get there.
We've practiced this talk so many times that now I can do the right hand. So now changing the way you think leads to changing your perspective on life and the way we act in this world. Now I'm going to say that one more time. If changing the way you think leads to changing your perspective on life and the way we act in the world, doesn't this give us the power to change just about anything? There's one little caveat here. After sharing our story, dozens of people came up and wanted advice, and I totally get that. I was the same way. I wanted someone to tell me, why am I going through what I'm going through? And what we heard a lot of times, though, was these couple statements, but she or but he, but she or but he. And sometimes we'd wait to let people realize what they were saying, and but most of the time, they had no idea. They hadn't truly caught on. They couldn't see it. So this lesson wasn't crafted really, so you can change your spouse, or change your kids, or change your boss, or change your best friend. It was to share with you how you can change your own thoughts, your own perspective, and your own actions. If you were writing down other people's names that needed to hear this message or this podcast when it came out later, I want you to cross that off and write down your own. Each person has their own thoughts that create their story. And I recently heard this example that may put into perspective for you even a bit more. So let's pretend you're walking by a house and you see this house start on fire. You have no connection to this home, but of course feel compelled to help. Call 911, try to help someone in need. Your story to your friends and family would be really exciting. You'll have something that you remember for the rest of your life. But for the most part, your personal life does not change. Now, step into the boots of the firefighter. This is their job. They do this every single day. This isn't really new to them. They probably maybe won't even tell their story because their spouse or people around them have heard the story over and over again. This is their job. This story would be mixed in with the rest of their stories that they tell. But what if you set this fire? Now, you may not even have imagined that part of the story, but what if you were the arsonist? Can you imagine the story you'd be telling? Maybe not to anyone in particular for fear of being put into jail, but that story would be different. The voices in your head would be completely different than the previous two people. And last but not least, what if you were the homeowner? What if you lived in this house that had just been set on fire? Life is forever changed for you. Memories are lost. Collections you have gathered over the years, they're gone. Their story, their life, your story, your life is different forever and ever. You'll always remember this moment in your life, and it will forever change the direction. Now, one fire and four or more, really, different stories, which were all very real, very, very real, which all have different emotions and different endings. Endings that you can't change. These are their stories. This is their story. You cannot change it at all. And in our case, we both had our own story. On our own path we were walking down, Preston convinced me with his words to make a change, but he couldn't with his actions. It wasn't until we were walking down the same street together, watching the same fire, that we could see and create the same story together.
Our counselor got us to see the same story by focusing on ourselves. So we would go there and we'd dump all our frustrations out on him about somebody else, about her, or whatever's going on. And he would find a very simple way to get us to look in the mirror. Because changing somebody else, we always had a picture of how we wanted life to be. I had a picture of how I wanted her to be. But changing somebody else doesn't really work very well, as you may know. A statement that I would consciously repeat to myself is, think good thoughts. Thoughts become words, words become actions, actions become habits, habits becomes character, and character becomes your destiny. In order to be the character that you want to be, you can't skip the foundation, which is thinking good thoughts, like the two verses we just read to you before from Paul.
I love that statement up on the screen right now. Think good thoughts. Thoughts become words. Words become actions. Actions become habits. Habits become character. Character becomes destiny, and because I can't memorize that all in my head, like Preston can, I just go from thoughts become your destiny. And you can walk through that whole path, but simply thoughts become your destiny. So here's what happened. Here's how this all played out for us. As we shifted our thoughts and perspective and actions, the other took notice. As we aligned our thoughts, we often spoke, took action on those truths, and eventually this habit turned into who we were. You could say that we found ourselves. You want to know the hardest part of it all? We had to drown out all of the voices. all of the voices we had once asked to hear, the people we had gone to ask advice from, that we went to share in our misery, people that we just wanted to share our story with. Some of these people were close friends and family and our friends, the ones from our coworkers and clients, the ones from people who told us exactly what we wanted to hear rather than what we needed to hear. We had to drown those out. Now, I know you may not be stuck in your marriage. That might not be the thing you're stuck in. But I imagine you have something in that old brain of yours that really is stuck, that could use some adjusting, that you could use those four A words that we listed out earlier to help you get unstuck. Now, my question to you is, what thoughts are you filling your mind with? The voice of other people or God's truth, the negative feed we often find on social media, or honestly just avoiding that scroll altogether, the frustration of things undone around the house, or the gratitude that you even have a house, the criticism of your spouse, or the love we find in God's word. Now, we of course have now learned we can train our brain. We can soar above the negative, but it starts right here in our mind. Imagine the marriage you could build if your focus was here and not there. Imagine the relationships that could be healed if your focus was on creating a better you and not a better them. Imagine the tension that could be avoided if you thought more about how you could be a better neighbor rather than how horrible a neighbor you already have. This is the type of world we want to live in. And we imagine the same is true for all of you. And if that world is possible, if change is really possible, it's going to start with us. Big change starts when we think small, intentionally, and consistently. Because what we think really matters, and as our story and our lives and our marriage has demonstrated, our thoughts will become our destiny.
We want to thank you for joining us on this busy 4th of July weekend. Next week, Sten will be back to wow us in some message to help get our mindset shift. I'm going to close us in prayer, and then we got one more song, and that'll be it for today. Lord, I want to thank you for the amazing, unique minds that you've given all of us. I pray that you can give us the desire and the tools to keep our minds captive to what you've instructed us. And like you promised, through these habits, we can find your will for us in our lives. Thank you for all the ways that you speak to us and that you put in us all the desire to have a better life. Guide us as we strive to be closer to you. In Jesus' name.